So if you look at Elon Musk and Dario Amodei, they fundamentally disagree on, well, pretty much everything when it comes to the future of
Oh,
AI.
absolutely, night and day.
Right. I mean, they have these wildly divergent philosophies on open source models and AI safety and, how fast this tech should even be pushed out to the public.
Yeah, they've been pretty vocal about that friction too.
Exactly. So why on earth are the heads of xAI and Anthropic suddenly shaking hands over this 300 megawatt server farm in Memphis, Tennessee?
It is definitely bizarre visual, I'll give you that.
It really is. Anyway, welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a huge stack of tech newsletters from May 7, 2026. We've got stuff from TLDR, Axios AI, plus a code towards data science and the information.
That is quite the stack.
It is, yeah. And our mission today is to really just map out these tectonic shifts that are happening in the tech landscape right now.
Because things are moving incredibly fast.
Yeah, so fast. We're starting with these shocking billionaire alliances in massive server farms, and we're taking it all the way down to a very personal question for you, the listener, which is, what makes your human intuition irreplaceable in an AI-driven world?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Truly. It kind of feels like the AI landscape right now is this high-stakes game of musical chairs. But instead of chairs, they're supercomputers, and some of the players are suddenly teaming up to share a seat.
That's a great way to put it. And, the real so what that frames this entire stack of newsletters today is that the industry has officially moved out of the theoretical phase.
Right, like we're done just talking about it.
Exactly. We're no longer debating what a large language model might theoretically accomplish someday. We're deep into the gritty physical reality of infrastructure.
The nuts and bolts.
Yeah, the bottleneck is no longer just algorithm design. It is the raw physical acquisition of hardware, of power grids, and just the incredibly messy reality of human engineers trying to orchestrate systems that are scaling way faster than our ability to even monitor them.
Well, let's start with that physical reality because the headline from TLDR about that Memphis data center is just staggering.
Massive.
Anthropic, which is, arguably one of the top three heavyweights in frontier AI right now, just secured this massive compute deal to access SpaceX and xAI's Colossus One data center.
Which is huge news.
Right. And Axios AI Plus framed this as a strange bedfellows situation, or like an enemy of my enemy dynamic, considering all that public friction between Amodei and Musk we just talked about.
Yeah, they aren't exactly best friends.
No, not at all. It's honestly like Batman and the Joker teaming up to rent an apartment just because rent in Gotham got too high.
That is, wow, that's surprisingly accurate.
But, putting the personalities aside for a second, the sheer scale of the Colossus facility is what really caught my attention. It provides over 300 megawatts of power.
Yeah, and to really understand the gravity of that number, we have to look at the actual physics of training a frontier AI model.
Okay, lay it out for us.
So 300 megawatts is basically the equivalent of powering a small to medium-sized city.
Just for one data center.
Just for one. And it's not just about keeping the lights on either. When you're training a model with, potentially trillions of parameters, you are coordinating hundreds of thousands of GPUs.
And they all have to talk to each other. Right.
Exactly. They have to communicate with microsecond latency.
Yeah.
And the heat generated by that sheer density of silicon is astronomical.
I can't even imagine. It must be like an oven in there.
Oh, totally. The cooling infrastructure alone requires these massive industrial-scale liquid cooling systems. So when Anthropic signs a deal like this, they aren't just like renting regular server space. They are securing access to a highly specialized, hyper-dense supercomputer environment, something that takes billions of dollars and years of bureaucratic permitting just to build.
But wait, Anthropic already has major partnerships with cloud giants like AWS and Google Cloud,
They
right?
do, yeah.
So why do they need to go to xAI, who is a direct competitor in the foundational model space, to get this compute? I mean, is this a coordinated threat against OpenAI, or is it just pure desperation for power?
It's a bit of both, honestly,
Right.
but it's mainly a strategic pivot for the entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
And the information provides some really crucial context here.
What are they saying?
xAI is quietly turning into a cloud services provider.
Wait, really? Like AWS?
Basically, yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, they built a gargantuan Colossus infrastructure initially just to train their own Grok models.
Right, for their own stuff.
But the economics of a 300 megawatt data center dictate that you literally cannot let any of that capacity sit idle. It's just too expensive.
So they have to rent it out.
Exactly. They're renting out compute to third parties, The information actually compares this to how CoreWeave carved out their massive multi-billion dollar niche.
Oh, right. CoreWeave, the GPU guys.
Yeah. While Amazon and Google offer, you know, generalized cloud services like hosting websites or running standard enterprise databases, companies like CoreWeave and now xAI are offering bare metal, hyper-optimized GPU clusters.
So they are specifically tuned just for AI workloads.
Exactly.
So xAI is essentially becoming this highly specialized landlord. They're subsidizing their massive capital expenses by leasing their excess capacity to their own rivals.
Pretty brilliant when you think about it. It turns their biggest expense into a massive revenue stream.
And for Anthropic, I guess it diversifies their dependency. Like if you rely entirely on Google or Amazon for your compute.
And those same companies are building competing models.
Like Gemini and Claude's rivals, yeah.
Right.
Then you are strategically vulnerable. Compute really is the new global currency, isn't it? Anthropic is just making sure they use multiple banks.
That's exactly it. It completely redefines the alliances in Silicon Valley. They're no longer defined by, you know, philosophical alignment on AI safety.
Right. It's just about the hardware.
Purely about who controls the silicon and the power grid.
Well, if raw hardware is the ultimate bottleneck, then it makes total sense that the industry is desperately trying to route around the dominant players in that space.
Oh, for sure.
And we've talked for years about NVIDIA's essentially impenetrable moat in the AI chip market.
The absolute gold standard.
But according to the Code newsletter, someone just breached the castle walls.
Yeah, this is massive news.
They reported that a new cutting-edge AI model was successfully trained entirely without NVIDIA chips. They likely used alternative architectures from AMD, Intel Gaudi, or maybe some custom silicon.
And you really cannot overstate the significance of bypassing NVIDIA here. Because NVIDIA's dominance hasn't just been about manufacturing the fastest physical chips.
Right, it's the software, too.
Exactly. Their true moat has been CUD, which is their proprietary parallel computing platform. For over a decade, almost all AI research and software development was written specifically to run on CUD.
So to use an analogy, it's like NVIDIA didn't just build the fastest cars on the market. They built an entire global network of highways where the asphalt was specifically engineered to only fit the exact tread pattern of NVIDIA brand tires.
That is a perfect way to explain the software lock-in.
So if you bought an AMD car, you couldn't drive on the roads. You were just stuck.
Right. So to train a model entirely without NVIDIA means the industry has finally built the translation layers.
The abstraction frameworks.
Exactly, to break that lock-in. Developers are figuring out how to write code that can compile and run efficiently on alternative hardware.
And once that software dependency is abstracted away, compute just becomes a true commodity.
Yep. You just buy whichever chip gives you the most parallel processing power per watt, and you don't even care what logo is stamped on it.
It's like someone finally built a solar-powered car to bypass the only gas station in town.
Exactly. And this relentless push for efficiency, like cutting out the middlemen, it's happening all the way down to the data architecture itself.
Oh, yeah. TLDR had two really interesting updates on that front.
Right. The DuckDB thing and the S3 architecture.
Yes. First, they did a deep dive into DuckDB, which is an analytical database operating at just blazing speeds. And second, this new architecture pattern that makes raw S3 object storage directly searchable and queryable.
And both of these developments really point to the same structural shift, which is the collapse of the data middleware layer.
Okay, let's look at the mechanics of DuckDB first, because I know that can get a little dense.
Sure. So it achieves this incredible speed through three distinct mechanisms. First, it is an in-process database. Second, it uses columnar storage. And third, it executes queries using vectorized processing.
Okay, let's definitely break those down. In-process makes sense to me. Like, instead of the application sending a query across a network to some dedicated database server, the engine lives directly inside the app's own memory space.
Exactly. So you totally eliminate the network latency. It's instantaneous.
Got it. But walk us through the difference between traditional row-based storage and columnar storage. Why does that matter so much?
Okay, so think of a traditional operational database. It stores data by row. If you have a massive table of customer data, each row contains a name, an address, a purchase history, and an age.
Like a giant spreadsheet.
Right. Now, if an analyst wants to calculate the average age of a million customers, the database engine has to pull every single row into memory. It has to scan past the name, past the address, past the history, just to locate the age value for each person.
That sounds incredibly inefficient.
It is. For analytics, it's terrible. but columnar storage groups all the ages together in one continuous block of memory. So the database only loads exactly what it needs.
Oh, wow. Okay. And what about the vectorization part?
So vectorization takes advantage of modern CPU architecture, specifically something called SIMMD, which stands for single instruction, multiple data. Instead of the processor taking one age, adding it to the next age, and repeating that process a million times in a slow loop, vectorized execution grabs a massive chunk of those ages, say, 1,000 at a time.
Oh, I see.
And it processes the math operation on all of them simultaneously in a single CPU cycle.
Wow.
So when you combine that columnar storage with vectorized execution directly inside the application process, queries that used to take minutes now take milliseconds.
That is wild, which perfectly explains why directly querying S3 object storage is gaining so much traction now.
Oh, absolutely.
Because historically, if a company dumped petabytes of raw user logs or like unstructured data into an Amazon S3 bucket, it was essentially just a dark archive.
Pretty much a data graveyard.
Yeah. To get any value out of it, you had to build an ETL pipeline. Extract, transform, load.
The dreaded ETL pipeline. It is seriously the bane of data engineering.
Right. Because you extract the data from S3, you run it through some massive transformation script to clean it up, and then you load it into an expensive centralized data warehouse just to run a simple search query.
It's clunky, it's brittle, and honestly, by the time the data is loaded, it's already stale.
But this new architecture pattern that TLDR mentioned bypasses the ETL pipeline entirely. You literally just aim your query directly at the raw S3 bucket.
Exactly. By pushing the compute down to the storage layer, you eliminate the need to move the data around at all.
That's a game changer.
It really is. When you combine non-NVIDIA models, DuckDB, and direct S3 querying, a very clear pattern starts to emerge.
Ah.
The tech stack is compressing.
We're basically cutting out all the middlemen.
We're cutting out the network hops, the proprietary software layers,
yeah. The
complex data pipelines. We're giving developers direct, unmediated access to raw compute and raw data.
But here's the catch, right?
Yeah.
When you remove all that friction at the bottom of the stack, the software developers at the top can suddenly move faster than they can think.
And that speed is creating massive architectural chaos.
Total chaos. Our sources actually present a fascinating contrast here between extreme engineered order on one side and absolute unmitigated chaos on the other.
So true.
On the side of order, TLDR covers how Netflix is managing its machine learning operations at this massive scale using what they call an ML metadata graph.
Which is honestly a masterclass in forensic engineering.
How does it work?
Well, Netflix has hundreds of distinct teams building machine learning models. You have algorithms predicting what movie you want to watch next, algorithms optimizing the video stream based on your internet speed.
Algorithms managing the global servers.
Right. And without extreme governance, it becomes a fragmented nightmare. You end up with models trained on deprecated data sets or multiple teams accidentally duplicating the exact same feature engineering.
So the metadata graph acts as like a centralized nervous system.
Exactly. It uses nodes and edges to map the exact relationship between every single asset in the company.
So if a specific recommendation model suddenly starts, you know, hallucinating or degrading in performance, Netflix engineers can use the graph to trace the lineage backward.
Spot on. They can see exactly which training run produced it, which specific version of the data set was used, and which data pipeline ingested that data. It's a perfectly mapped universe of cause and effect.
It forces total accountability into the development lifecycle.
It does. But as Axios AI Plus points out, the broader developer community is currently trending in the exact opposite direction.
The Wild West.
Yeah. We're seeing the rise of a phenomenon called vibe coding.
Vibe coding. I have to say, the name is almost too innocent for how dangerous this concept actually is.
It sounds so laid back.
It really does. But vibe coding is basically this trend where developers rely heavily on AI to generate massive blocks of code, drop it into their application, verify that it functionally works, and then just ship it to production without actually understanding the underlying logic.
Yep. They are literally coding by vibe.
Yeah.
If the app compiles and the feature looks right on the screen, they think it's good to go.
But the technical debt being generated by this practice has to be astronomical, right?
Oh, it is. Because when a human writes code, they apply architectural patterns. They leave comments explaining weird edge cases. And they structure the logic so the next engineer can actually read and maintain it.
But an AI doesn't care about the next engineer.
Not at all. When an AI generates code, it often solves the immediate prompt in the most convoluted brute force way possible.
It's like hiring a ghostwriter for your autobiography, but they write it in a language you don't speak.
That's a terrifying analogy.
Right. Sure, the book is done. It looks great on the shelf. But if someone asks you to explain the thematic subtext of chapter 3, you have absolutely no idea what the book actually says. You shipped a product you don't comprehend.
And this fragility is just being amplified by the emergence of generative UI agents, which the Code newsletter reported heavily on.
Oh, yeah, the dynamic interfaces.
Exactly. We're moving way beyond chat interfaces, where an AI just spits out text. Developers are now integrating agents that render dynamic user interface components on the fly.
So instead of a developer hard coding a static dashboard with like three charts and a slider,
the user just asks the AI a question, and the AI writes the code in real time to generate a custom interactive chart, renders it on the screen, and discards it when the user is done.
The software is literally building its own interface in real time.
Yes. Think about the intersection of generative UI and vibe coding.
Oh, boy.
You have AI agents dynamically generating interfaces, calling back-end functions that were also generated by AI, which the human developer never fully read or understood in the first place.
It's layers upon layers of mystery code.
If Netflix's ML Graph is a carefully engineered skyscraper where every single steel beam is stress-tested and cataloged, vibe coding creates a sprawling house of cards built by a machine.
Wow. And when a vulnerability is discovered, or when a system built on vibe coding inevitably breaks, the human developer is left staring at thousands of lines of machine logic, trying to reverse engineer an architecture they didn't even design.
It's an operational nightmare waiting to happen.
Which really brings a critical question into focus for you, the listener. Think about your own workflow right now. If the foundation of tech is compressing to the point where compute is a raw commodity and the application layer is being consumed by AI agents writing their own code and interfaces, where does your human domain expertise actually fit in?
Yeah, what is your moat?
Exactly. If you are a knowledge worker in this economy, what makes you irreplaceable? And the final source in our stack today from Towards Data Science tackles this exact anxiety.
And their conclusion is pretty profound, actually.
It really is. They argue that as the technical execution of tasks becomes automated, the fundamental role of the human totally shifts. The ultimate human moat is your accumulated experience and your pattern-matching intuition.
They lean heavily into this concept of tacit knowledge.
Yeah, let's draw a hard line between explicit knowledge and tacit knowledge because it's the absolute crux of their argument.
Okay, so explicit knowledge is basically anything that can be written down. It's a manual, a textbook, a corporate compliance wiki.
Stuff you can easily digitize.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And AI is infinitely better at explicit knowledge than you are. It has memorized every manual ever written.
Right. But tacit knowledge is embodied. It's like the philosopher Michael Polanyi's famous observation that we can know more than we can tell.
Think about learning to ride a bike.
Yes. You can't just read a prompt or a manual to understand balance. You have to physically feel it.
Exactly. But is the knowledge you possess but struggle to articulate into a prompt. Like, if you have spent a decade working in supply chain logistics, you've absorbed thousands of microvariables about the physical world.
You know the exact layout of a loading dock.
You know the specific friction between two departments that hate each other.
Yeah.
So when the AI generates a perfectly optimized logistics route, your explicit knowledge checks the math and says it's fine. But your tacit knowledge looks at the output and says, well, the algorithm is technically correct, but I know the warehouse manager in Chicago won't sign off on this workflow because he doesn't have the floor space to stage that much inventory.
Because the AI has the data, but you have the reality.
Exactly.
And TLDR actually highlighted an essay on design from the inside that backs this up at an organizational level. The essay argues that internal product design decisions at major tech companies are rarely driven by pure objective user data.
Which is a shock to a lot of people.
It is. But they're actually driven by internal culture. The final product is shaped by the intuition of the product managers, the unspoken compromises between the engineering and marketing teams, and just the lived reality of the organization.
Software is ultimately a reflection of the human system that builds it. And because that human system operates on tacit agreements, unspoken politics, and physical constraints, it resists pure digitization.
Okay, but I have to push back on that slightly.
Sure.
If an AI model is given access to a company's entire Slack history, every email thread, every Jira ticket, and every Zoom transcript, won't it eventually just reverse engineer that tacit knowledge? I mean, if a pattern exists in human behavior, isn't it just a matter of time before it becomes another data set for the model to ingest?
It's a very logical assumption, but it mistakes the map for the territory.
How so?
Data is a finite reduction of reality. A Slack message might record the final decision that was made, but it doesn't record the tension in the room, the tone of voice, or the subtle hesitation of the lead engineer before they agreed to it.
Ah, I see.
AI only knows what we consciously choose to measure and digitize. Human intuition operates in that vast, unmeasured space between the data points. And honestly, the most compelling evidence that this human mode is real comes from Google itself.
Oh, you're talking about the new feature rolling out in Search and Gemini.
Yes. TLDR covered Google's new expert advice integration. It's essentially an AI-mediated Q&A feature that specifically connects users to human domain experts.
Right, so you query the AI with some incredibly complex problem, and the AI essentially acts as a routing layer. It analyzes your question and decides, okay, I can summarize the documentation, but to actually solve this, I need to hand you off to a human.
And just consider the validation in that product choice. The engineers behind Gemini, which is arguably one of the most sophisticated AI models in existence, are explicitly coding a threshold where the AI's capability ends.
They're admitting defeat on certain things.
Basically, they recognize that for certain complex real-world problems, the absolute highest value output the AI can generate is to connect you to a human being with lived, embodied experience.
Because the AI can instantly recite all the medical literature on a rare disease.
But it requires a veteran clinician to listen to the specific cadence of a patient's breathing and intuitively recognize that they're masking their pain.
Wow, so your moat isn't about learning to type code faster than the AI or building a better stud sheet. Your moat is the messy, complex, undigitized reality of your specific domain.
Absolutely.
Well, we have covered a massive amount of ground today. We started by looking at the staggering physical reality of that 300 megawatt Colossus data center and how the raw economics of compute are forcing rivals like Musk and Amoday into these crazy strategic alliances.
Yep, compute is king.
We examined how the industry is breaking legacy bottlenecks, bypassing NVIDIA's CUD moat, using DuckDB's vectorized processing to accelerate queries, and totally killing the ETL pipeline by querying S3 directly.
Cutting out the middleman.
Exactly. And we looked at the tension in the developer world between the forensic order of Netflix's metadata graph and the incredibly fragile technical debt of developers vibe coding dynamic user interfaces.
A wild time to be a developer.
It really is. And it all lands on the reality of your own career. The tools are compressing the stack and automating the explicit knowledge. Your real value lies in cultivating the deep, tacit expertise that simply cannot be scraped from a web page or generated by a prompt.
You know, if we pull all these threads together, the collapsing data pipelines, the massive server farms, and the rise of AI-generated architecture, it leaves us with a lingering, somewhat provocative question.
Lay it on us.
If vibe coding becomes the industry standard, and we have human developers casually deploying vast dynamic software ecosystems that literally no human mind fully understands.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, companies are building 300 megawatt supercomputers to train even more capable agents to write even more of this opaque code.
Yeah.
Are we rapidly building a global digital infrastructure so dense and so layered with machine logic that we will inevitably require a completely new class of AI just to explain to us how our own world works?
Wow. That is honestly a haunting thought. We might be building the ultimate black box where the musical chairs are moving so fast, we need a machine just to tell us where to sit.
It's very possible.
Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Keep questioning the tools, keep building your human moat, and most importantly, keep learning. We'll catch you next time.